Nation. My name is Andy. I'll be your co-host for today, and with me, my lovely co-host, Nadia. How are you doing,
Hello.
Nadia?
Oh, I am tired, but I took a nap today, so it's all good. How are you?
Nice. I'm doing all right. I did not get to take a nap today, but I also hate naps.
What? Wow.
I hate
wow.
Naps.
All right.
Can't do it.
I used to hate them until I went to college, and then I was like, wow, this is freaking great, because before my naps were, they weren't intentional naps. I'd be like trying to do work or something and I'd just fall asleep.
Oh no. So
they were like naps, but like I didn't really want them. They just kind of took over. And then in college I really discovered the joy of cat naps, but it hasn't really been something I've been able to do since. So they are kind of back to accidental naps, which is kind of what I did today. But you know, I enjoyed it. It was really cool.
If I'm up for the day, I'm just up for the day. If I take a nap, it's sleeping. I'm just going to be sleeping.
Oh, no.
That's how my body wants to live.
I do worry whenever I take a nap. I'm like, oh, no, what if I can't fall asleep? But then, of course, like, you know.
No, you can always fall asleep.
Yeah, like 11 o'clock, I'm like, well, ready for bed again. I've been up for 2 hours, but take me again, sweet embrace of dreamland.
So anyway, this week, we are going to be talking about Big Hero 6.
Ew.
Considering, and this, the only reason we're talking about this film is because I made a comment on our last episode regarding this film and how it is weaker than the film we were talking about previously, despite that film not being nominated for an Oscar and this film winning the Oscar for Best Animated Film of that year.
And as someone who really enjoyed it and also tends to have very similar taste to Andy, I was like, wait, what? We don't like the same thing? So, of course, we have to talk about it in great length during this episode.
I'm still just so mad that Lego Movie didn't at least get a nomination that year.
I can't believe. I'm still bitter about trying really hard not to swear right now. I'm still bitter about freaking Box Trolls. I didn't like that movie. I didn't like it.
I genuinely believe that the Lego Movie was simply disregarded because it was named the Lego Movie. For the animated feature film category, I don't think that they put a whole lot of care or actual attention to what gets placed into that category.
Are you telling me that the Oscars don't have a very complicated scientific method for determining the films that are selected, and that it's just based off of opinion? Because that's a pretty egregious statement, Andy. Ridiculous.
I do understand why Big Hero 6 won the Oscar. And this is a film that I believe on paper and upon initial viewing does feel like a solid, well-formatted film. But if you let this film sink in for, like, literally longer than, like, if you let this film sink in for any longer than just a few seconds and just think about it for just a few seconds, it does not hold up.
I will say, and we're going to get into this a lot later, so stay tuned, but all of the things that Andy has brought up to me regarding, I was like, oh yeah, of course, like they all made 100%, they all made sense. I was like, how have I not thought of this? I've just been enjoying this film, but yep, every single thing you said is 100% true. So I do agree with you in many areas, which I wasn't expecting to. I was expecting this to be an entire episode where we just yelled back and forth at each other.
Entire episode where
and
you
then,
just
you know,
disagree
like,
with me, ultimately.
We never spoke ever again. Yeah.
Maybe I should be hiding more of my opinions, so it will get more surprise.
More surprise reactions where we just yell at each other.
Yeah.
Yes.
Or I get
that's
to
what,
change your mind live
needs.
On air.
Needs pure rage. Oh, that's true. Well, I feel like you've done that before, but yeah.
Or who knows? Maybe you changed my mind live on air. I can be wrong.
Ooh.
I'm never
I did teach.
Wrong.
I did teach AP Lang, so rhetoric, man. Whew.
Nadia can't hear this. Whew. But you can, listener. I'm never wrong.
Don't
what
tell
was that?
Andy. I don't tell Andy I said this. But I think he's got a little bit of an inflated ego. So everyone should send him messages about all the areas where he sucks. And then we can bring him back to Earth. Thanks. Thanks. Bye. I realized you edit this, so you could just take that out. You hold all of the power here.
I'm just gonna edit it to just be talking about how right I was all along.
It's just like a really, really, you just reformat all my words where I'm like, Andy was right all along. Like, you piece together different things I've said.
I definitely have enough audio for that. I can make that work.
Yep, 100%. Anyway, Big Hero 6, folks. Now we're at the part where we have to argue over who does the summary, because both of us hate that.
So, Big Hero 6 is a 2014 animated feature film produced by Disney, directed by Don Hall and Chris Williams. We follow Hero, a 14-year-old prodigy who graduated from high school at the age of 13 and is spending their free time going about illegally bot fighting and acting like some hot stuff. Hero's parents died while he was a fairly young age, and he has been raised by his older brother and his aunt. His older brother initially pushes him to try to better himself and get into a university that can hone his intelligence and get him to challenge himself. It is here where he meets his soon-to-be group of friends, each of whom has their own unique personality, and each of whom end up being one of the heroes in the team Big Hero 6, along with a giant inflatable robot that was invented by Hero's brother. Hero and this band of college students form a hero group, and that's the story.
You know, it's basically, it's your superhero origin story, so it's got all of the makings of that, you know, the process of becoming a hero, assembling a team, tracking down the villain.
And it is loosely based off a Marvel comic book series of the same name. This was a series that I was pretty familiar with going in, so I understood where they were coming from, and I honestly... And they deviated from the series a lot, and I really enjoyed how they deviated from it. I did not think that a lot of the things that were in the original series would have worked in a standalone animated Disney film. I'm not one of those kinds of people who will get all up in arms because my source material wasn't met or followed to any specific degree. So what was your exposure to this film? What was your watching experience?
So unlike Andy, who, you know, at least had read the comics and seen the trailer, I didn't know anything going into this film. I was home from college for, it was Thanksgiving break, and I was hanging out with my friend Leah, who has, you know, introduced me to some of the other shows that we've talked about, and she was just like, yo, have you seen this film? It was really freaking good. You would love it. And I was like, I live under a rock and have never heard of it, even though it is a major Disney picture that has probably been marketed for months. But, you know, missed me. So she was like, all right, we're going. And we hopped on the red line. We went to the theater. And yeah, I knew literally nothing going in. She was just like, it's great. You'll love it. And I was like, cool. I trust you. And I did. I really, really enjoyed it the first time through. I come back to it every few years just to kind of watch while I'm like puttering around or doing something. I really enjoy the characters. I love all of their personalities. I think Baymax is hysterical and lovely. And it is a film that I genuinely enjoyed.
Yeah, I can absolutely say the same. I did genuinely enjoy this film despite my complaints. I do think that all in all, it is a good film. It is worth the watch. I absolutely understand why certain demographics would not enjoy it.
Specifically, who are you talking about there?
I think it's specifically people who want like more serious and well-written films, like the kind of people who would specifically go for... I don't want to say the kind of people who wouldn't go for an animated film, because I don't
like the animated films are absolutely capable of putting out just as good storylines as any non-animated feature. But I do think this tends to play it a bit safe. I do think this tends to be a bit generic.
Mm-hmm.
And I absolutely understand why someone would dislike this film.
I can respect that. So who, burping all over the place. So who would you recommend it to?
If you are a fan of just Marvel fanfare and the fun, lighthearted superhero tropes and aren't tired of origin story after origin story, I would definitely recommend it. It is definitely on par with most of Disney's works from that same time frame. A lot of the issues I have with this film are very similar to issues I have with films like Frozen. And that's a whole nother topic of conversation that we can discuss later on. But, and like, it's a good family film. I would definitely recommend it if you are just looking for something to have on for the kids. I don't know if I would recommend it if you're not a fan of superhero films. I don't know if I would recommend it.
I really enjoyed it, and I'm not a huge fan of superhero films, which is something that I was going to mention. I mean, like, you know, I watch the Marvel films, I watch them as they come out, but I don't really typically, like, necessarily get super hyped or, like, care for a lot of them in many ways. And I really enjoyed Big Hero 6 because it kind of gave me all of the, like, all of the little bits of superhero films with, like, you know, having a team that works together, having these cool fights, having the, you know, kind of the simple progression of, like, your team of heroes versus this villain, without having all of the violence that you typically get from a lot of the other live-action Marvel superhero films. So I like that. As somebody who, like, kind of enjoys superhero films but isn't, like, super invested in them as a whole genre, I appreciated Big Hero 6 as something that was approachable to me that gave me kind of those little bits without the violence or, like, the need to have all of this pre-existing knowledge of, like, a specific universe or other characters, like, all that stuff.
That's absolutely fair, and I think that's a valid opinion to have. But and on that note, I do also think that I wouldn't recommend this if you are someone who is on the other end of that spectrum, where you do enjoy superhero films, but you go to them for the more darker elements and the violence and all of that. It's definitely very Marvel, and it's very Disney.
Yeah.
Which, if that's not your cup of tea, I understand, and I validate your opinion.
And if it is your cup of tea, I understand, and I validate your opinion.
Yeah, we can only validate one opinion. Anything else, we disregard. I do think the humor is quite good throughout. I think Baymax himself lends to a lot of very good jokes in both his actions, his physical comedy, just the way he is designed can be very funny.
Yeah, I would say that he is pretty much the jokes. Like, Baymax makes up most of the comedy of the entire film.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that.
But in, like, a really, really lovely way where, again, he's not a character whose sole purpose is to just be super goofy over the top and be the comedy relief. He is a very important character, and he's given a lot of weight within the film. You care very deeply for him, and he's not annoying in that way that Disney can sometimes get to. Olaf! Where you just have this character who's, like, very overt and kind of annoying, and that's where their humor comes from. Baymax is very quiet and subtle, and that's where a lot of his humor comes from, as it's often kind of dissonant from the chaos or the hecticness that is sort of surrounding him. So I thought his, like, the humor from Baymax was very refreshing. It was new. He wasn't really a character. I hadn't experienced a character that was him before. So I appreciated that, for me, that area of freshness from the film.
Yeah. Do you remember that one line when they initially go onto that island and they're passing by? They're like, entering the sign, and Wasabi goes, "Hey, that sign says quarantine. Do y'all know what quarantine means?" And I was like, that...
Oh, no.
That line lands differently.
And then he goes on to say, like, oh, I didn't write it down, but he, like, goes on to say, it means you have to stay isolated so you don't, like, get contaminated or spread sickness to other people and possibly die, and I was just like, oh my god,
I'm watching this to escape from reality.
And it was like, it so unintentionally hit such a specific 2020 vibe that I was just like, geez, like, I've never given a second thought to that line. I've seen this movie countless times, and like, this time I was like, oh my god. Yes, amazing. So that is one of the jokes that does not come from Baymax. That is mostly a joke because of the horrible, horrible world that we live in right now. But hey, laugh about it, folks.
Yeah, I do think that a lot of the, I would say that a lot of the characters outside of Baymax get some funny lines.
Some
of my favorite lines would come from not Baymax. Like, I spill wasabi on my shirt one time!
That's true. Okay, I think you're right. I do think that, see, changing my mind, live.
Live on air. Yeah, we got it.
Live on air. All of the other side characters, because that's kind of what they are, but all of the other team of Big Hero 6.
So I have this conflicting opinion.
They all have funny moments, but...
I have this conflicting opinion regarding the Big Hero 6 team outside of Baymax and Hero, in that they each have their own unique personalities. They are each their own person, but it very much feels like the script doesn't treat them that way.
What do you mean?
I don't think you ever see any of them interacting with Hero or even each other individually.
That's fair.
They always appear on screen at the same time. They were literally on a phone call all together.
Yeah. That's very true.
It's very rare that you actually get the sense that they are their own characters. It's they are this team.
Yeah. And I do understand how that kind of comes from the way that the first film is constructed. Like, again, most of it does follow Hero, and it's really about his journey, and the other characters are vehicles that help him get there. And they, you know, the film gives them fantastic individual personalities and, like, different vibes. They do feel like uniquely constructed characters, but we aren't really able to appreciate them as individual characters because of the heavy focus on Hero. So, like, if they ever did make a sequel to this movie, which I would honestly not mind, I would hope that would be an opportunity for them to expand and further develop those other characters.
There's an animated TV series.
I see that.
I haven't seen any of it, but there is an animated TV series.
I noticed that on Disney Plus, and I was like, huh. So I am curious. I get very skeptical of movies that are turned into TV shows, but...
Same.
I might give it a shot and just see. And this is just very much a personal thing, where a film has been created with a certain animation style, and then the movie is just a different... and then they make a TV show that's, like, a different type of animation. And, like, I get it.
Oh, yeah, it very much takes you out of the world.
Yeah, and I was like, because I was looking at the show in at least a little thumbnail, I'm assuming it's more of a 2D animated show than the 3D animation of the movie. And
I'm also curious if they carry a lot of the same voice actors.
Well, that's good. And I think Tangled also did a film that's, like, 2D animated.
No, I'm not stating that. I'm asking that.
Oh, do they? I have no idea. Let's see. Big Hero 6.
Looks like it does.
Series shorts. Big Hero 6, the series. Oh, Wasabi is a different character, it looks like.
Yeah.
Or a different, sorry, not a different character, a different voice actor. Baymax is the same. Hero is the same. Fred is different, I think. Wasabi is different. Honey Lemon is the same. And Go-Go is the same. Aunt Cass is the same. Not that that really matters.
Who knows? We'll probably dig into this in the future.
Yeah, I'd be curious. I would definitely take some time to watch this. Yeah, I would like to see the characters get a little bit more. Do I think it would be easy for them to do a sequel or to just have a series of shorts where all the characters are always together? Yes, I would not put it past a sequel to do that, but I would hope that it would give the opportunity to unpack the characters more in depth and get a sense of more of who they are. But then again, I'm a huge fan of origin stories. I don't give a crap if we've already had an origin story. I would love to know more about, like, Honey Lemon's background or upbringing or, like, you know, Wasabi's home life. I don't know. Give me all that crap. Teach me more about these characters. Oh, I'm all for it.
But I don't mind origin stories I don't mind origin stories so long as they're unique. I do get a little bit tired when it's the same origin story over and over again.
That is very, very, very fair. So you are tired of the origin story, not origin stories as a whole.
Yeah, not the concept of origin stories as a whole, exactly. But I've seen Uncle Ben die enough times, I don't need more of that.
Okay, but to be fair, that was because they kept rehashing the exact same character's origin story, which I agree is ridiculous. So are you talking about, like, rehashing the exact same story over and over again, or, like, the tropes of origin stories replayed for different characters? Because I can understand both.
No, I'm specifically referring to actively rehashing the exact same origin story over and over
again.
That
I am 200%.
And, like, at this point, it's been established that we don't need that origin story.
Yeah, that's also very true.
I don't need to see Bruce Wayne's parents get killed anymore. Sorry, spoilers for Batman.
Yeah, no, we've gotten new origin stories now, which are even better. Like, Into the Spider-Verse, which we'll totally talk about at some point.
Although, that is a perfectly good example of how to give me the exact same origin story multiple times without me getting tired of it.
Exactly, because it's literally different.
Like, it's doable.
Yeah, just... don't be lazy.
Yeah.
Hey, folks. Just... Hey, movie folks out there listening. People in, you know, the movie world who are totally out there listening right now. Have I got a tip for you? You listening? Don't be lazy. Now, you're welcome. We're going to have fantastic movies in 2021 thanks to that broadcast from me.
I mean, you joke. I do genuinely think we're gonna get some fantastic animated features in the year 2021.
I hope so. I am all for it.
So, what? Yeah, no. One of the main reasons I wanted to create this podcast was specifically because of the pandemic that we're currently in, as of the recording of this episode.
Spoiler alert! Spoiler alert for 2020.
I honestly think we are going to get a renaissance of animation in the coming years. Specifically because we have to go through this time frame of being unable to be in the same room with each other, making it significantly easier and better for studios to fund animated feature films where you don't have to have voice actors in the same room to record their pieces. They can be on the other side of the country and still be able to get and deliver good, maybe not nearly as good as they would be if they were in the same room, but still good quality lines and good quality scenes.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd be super into that. I mean, obviously I like animation. Surprise. But hella into that.
Oh, yeah. And, like, that does require that studios actively see this and take advantage of it. And I don't think some of them are. But, you know, a girl can dream.
Okay, yeah. You know, having hope in these turbulent times is important, even if that hope is just for more animated movies. Hold on to that hope.
Yeah, always trying to look on the bright side of things.
Exactly. All right,
we do get a bit of an Easter egg in the course of the film. Prince Hans from Frozen appears twice in the film.
Once
on a wanted poster in
the
police station. And again, as a statue that Baymax destroys.
Oh my god.
And literally, as Baymax is destroying the statue, I was like, oh hey, that's Prince Hans. And then, like, I had Frozen on my mind. And
as one does.
Frozen is very interconnected to Tangled with me in my mind, because as I'm sure a number of people know, Frozen and Tangled take place in the same universe. I guess not canonically anymore, considering Frozen 2 sort of put a hole in that whole story. But there is a fan theory that states that the trip that Anna and Elsa's parents were making when they died was to go to Rapunzel's wedding. And you do see Rapunzel in Frozen during Anna's coronation.
What? You do?
So anyway, I had that whole, like, mental thought process in my mind, and as I was coming to that conclusion,
whoa.
I saw Honey Lemon, and I was like, wow, Honey Lemon looks just like Rapunzel. did they use the same character model on that?
Oh my god, did they? Rapunzel and Honey Lemon. I mean, they're both built super differently in terms of, like, okay, well, their mouths are super different.
I don't know. I think...
Oh, they're very similar.
They're extremely similar.
And I didn't notice that because they move in super different ways.
Like, oh, yeah, and their speech patterns are different.
And they're moving, and their... Yeah, and their speech patterns are super different, so I hadn't put that together, but... I mean, they do have kind of similar faces. Although they have very different noses. Meaning
I do
that
think
Honey
there
Lemon
is...
actually has a nose, and Rapunzel is, like, not a nose.
I do think there is something to, like, most, or I'm not going to say most, but, like, a lot of the Pixar, Disney, 3D animated models... Mm-hmm. tend to look very similar.
Which is why I put so much stock into Dashi, because I was like, all right, here's a beautiful, wonderful, not actual prince, but prince in my eyes, who, like, does feel super different than a lot of the other male characters we've gotten. So I put all of my emotional baggage in that cantaloupe. I'm just looking at a bunch of pictures of Honey Lemon. Anyway, carry on. Where were we?
Anyway, is there anything else we would like to go over before we go into spoilers?
I don't think so. I think I'm good.
Did I blow your mind with the presence of Prince Hans in this film?
Yeah, that was insane. I didn't even notice that. I also didn't notice Rapunzel at Anna's coronation, so clearly...
A flash, and it's Rapunzel with her, like, short brown hair, so it's not even, like... Mm-hmm. All that it's literally like the back of her head for like a second.
Yeah, well, I just looked it up, and like, she's, you know, she has her very distinctive kind of like lace-up dresses that she always wears, so that also just kind of confirms it's obviously her.
Yeah,
like the same. So that's crazy. Didn't know any of that.
I mean, we could probably do a whole episode on fan theories, but there's also a fan theory that Tarzan, that the ship from Tarzan is the wrecked ship from Anna and Elsa's parents.
Yo.
And that Tarzan is technically their brother.
What? What? Would that even make sense? I'd have to, like, I feel like I'd have to analyze. But then what frickin' time period does this take place in?
No, it actually does make sense.
It does?
Both for time period and for location.
I
could pull up a literal map.
I guess I'm just not used to women wearing bustles during Rapunzel or Frozen. But I mean, again, I guess they do take place in literally different places. So, interesting. I'll have to chew on that for some time.
So, from this point forward, we will be discussing Big Hero 6 with some very heavy emphasis on spoilers. If you have not seen the film, it is available in full on Disney Plus. I would recommend you do so.
Me too. More so than Andy, probably. Well, I will go first, as I have some feelings about my experience watching this movie for the first time. Because, as I said, I had not seen the trailer, nor did I know anything about it, except for the fact that I was told I would like it, and I was like, alright, sure. So I wasn't aware that Tadashi dies, which ripped out my friggin' heart, because I loved him as a character. I, like, was hella into, like, his wonderful model of, like, being an emotional older brother, being a good male role model, caring for his family, like, looking out for his brother, doing all these awesome freaking things, being a fantastic dude, and then, you know, what, like, 20 or 30 minutes into the movie, he's dead! And I didn't expect it, and I didn't want it, and it still gets me every time, even though I know it's coming. So I just wanted to get that off my chest, but I'm still mad about it. I'm still upset. Why couldn't someone else have died and catapulted them into being the big hero? Like, I just want more of him as a character, and I'm so sad that I don't get it.
No, I understand. So I went into this film, and I saw Tadashi as the mentor figure. And when I see a character in any given franchise as the mentor figure, my expectation is that they're going to die.
Which is a stupid expectation!
But
not
it's
a stupid
true.
Thing for, No, not a stupid thing for you to expect, a stupid thing that we have to expect it because we've received that narrative so many frickin' times.
Exactly.
Which is annoying because we've already established that his parents are dead. We already have a dead mentor figure. We don't need another one!
So I honestly did not feel anything when Tadashi died.
Oh my god, you heartless monster!
Well, like, I went in expecting it. It was...
Okay, but I watched it yesterday knowing that he had died, watching him die. Like, I've seen him die multiple times, and I still cried when he died.
Look, Nadia.
Yes.
I'm not going to say I don't cry easily. Because I do.
That is something we both share.
I cry very easily, especially during animated films, especially during scenes that revolve around the loss of a loved one. I cried during Do You Want to Build a Snowman?
You're amazing, and I love you.
I was brought to genuine tears during Do You Want to Build a Snowman? This movie did not make me cry once.
What about the short that played before the movie?
Which short played before this film?
It was the one with the dog, who had the owner who had broken up with his girlfriend and was, like, super sad, and he was trying to get him happy again.
Oh, yeah. No, I did cry during that.
Because that made me cry too, which set me up for then
100%.
Crying
multiple
times.
No, I absolutely cried
movie.
During. I do remember the short you're talking about. Okay. 100% cried during that short. Did not feel a single thing during the film.
Oh my god.
I think there's another. I cried during Wreck-It Ralph, Nadia.
I mean, same.
Anyway, there.
We're each gonna try to one up each other. Yeah, cry this during is the what most I obscure cried. Thing.
But like. So there are a few points where it's very clearly an emotional scene, and they're very clearly going for this, like, tear-jerking reaction. Tadashi's death is one of them. I went in understanding full well that this was going to happen. I never really invested myself into that character as a whole to the point where I felt that I could cry. And, like, it serves a narrative purpose. I understand why it happened. I understand... I'm not going to say I understand how it happened, or the intentions behind the actual fire itself, but in terms of getting Hiro to where he needed to be in that specific narrative, I understand.
Yeah.
The other point in memory where there's an emotional scene is the scene where you have Hiro being reminded of his brother by Baymax, where Baymax plays him the tape of Tadashi going through all the iterations of Baymax and trying to get Baymax set up correctly, which honestly, I think, and so there's a YouTuber called Sideways that does a whole lot of music analysis and specifically film score. And he described that scene as one that is meant to be emotional, but it doesn't quite hit. And he attributes it to the score, which honestly the score does leave a bit to be desired, and gives an example of what could be used better, and uses the score from Finding Nemo when Marlin's wife dies and Marlin's going down and saying that it's just Nemo left, because it's a score that is specifically built to structure itself around the relationship between family members and the bonds there within. And well, I do think that he plays that scene with the new score underneath it, and I do think that it does play better. It does feel much more emotional, and maybe if I were to see it with the context of the rest of the film, I would feel a bit more towards it, but I didn't quite get there.
Are you talking that you're talking still about Big Hero 6?
Yes.
Okay. I wasn't sure. Okay.
I think the score does leave a bit to be desired. There's not really much sound outside of the dialogue in that scene. And that is purposeful. I'm not going to say that it was a bad design or a bad idea. I definitely could not write a film better than this. But it didn't quite get me. And I think the reason for it not getting me, score aside, which it didn't help, but score aside, I think that specific emotional journey at that point in the film felt very rushed, because it was immediately preceded by a very high energy, intense moment with Hiro. And then
it is treated as this video just sort of being the end-all, be-all fix to Hiro's grief.
Mm-hmm.
Which, it feels cheap, and I think I could feel that in the theater when I initially saw it. And it didn't quite get me the way I normally would be reacting to something like that. Because generally, like, the reminders of a loved one and their history with you, or their interactions with the people around you is absolutely something that would get me.
Yeah, same. 100%.
What were your thoughts on that scene?
Well, after talking about how cheap it was, it makes me feel a little bit embarrassed to say that I, like, freaking bawled through that entire scene the first time I saw it. Again, I didn't know that Tadashi was going to die, so I, like, right off the bat, put all of this investment in him as a character. Like, I remember sitting in the theater and turning to Leah and being like, oh my god, I love this character. And she was like, great! to not tell me that he dies. So in the scene where he dies, like, there's this scene where you see him going in, and I was just like, oh my god, like, they're not gonna do this, but they also probably are gonna do this. Oh my, and I was, you know, like, expecting it, but also kind of holding on that little bit of hope that maybe it wasn't going in the direction that I knew it would. And then the building just explodes, and Hiro is, like, thrown back, and it's this very sudden, as, you know, explosions tend to be. And it just totally caught me off guard. So I remember, like, you know that kind of crying where just, like, you're so shocked that it just, like, hits you and your mouth falls open and all of a sudden you're just, like, sobbing?
Yeah, I've definitely been there.
Because that's where I was at in the theater. And then when they played, when they did the scene with Hiro seeing sort of his brother, the first time I saw it, again, I think it was because I just, like, so clearly did not expect to see Tadashi again, that the experience of seeing him and the experience of having Hiro being able to see a new side of Tadashi after his death definitely got to me. So I did cry a second time. I do totally get your point about how the moments after that are very condensed and the mood shifts very quickly.
And even obviously, the moments before that.
Yeah. But I think there's also something to say about sort of the emotional relief that you get from this quiet moment in between large sort of like chaotic, the like larger chaotic action adventure-y moments that really progress forward. Like that very much was this kind of brief respite where you were taking a break from that forward momentum to just kind of like remember and like feel for Tadashi. And I think part of my emotion came from getting that moment of rest, right? Where you're like so hyped up and then you get this kind of shift in tone or in momentum. And that shift kind of, for me, set me up for like to feel more emotional. I don't know if that makes any sense.
No, that absolutely makes sense. Cause I'm trying to think of the right word here.
It's just kind of like, you've been, I'm trying to think of the right metaphor to use. It's kind of like you've been, you're on this like big hike and you've been walking for, you've been like, maybe you're jogging on a hiking trail or whatever. And you like take a moment to pause and you look out and between the trees, you can see the mountains and like you take this big breath. It's kind of like that. It's like this moment of pause where you just see something where the focus has shifted to a new direction just enough for you to feel like you can take a step back from the path that you've been traveling on, if that works.
Yeah, that's fair.
But I also definitely see how that rest would hit people differently depending on the emotional investment you had in the character. And like,
yeah.
Clearly we're on opposite spectrums.
I was
like,
not
okay.
Nearly as emotionally invested in Tadashi as a character.
And I literally came into this film and like within the first 5 minutes I was like, I have a new favorite Disney character. I am obsessed with this boy, this man. He is perfect and wonderful in every way and I love him. And then my heart got ripped out. So, you know. Different experiences there.
That's fair. Whereas I went in with like a very analytical mind, I was like, oh, that's the mentor figure. They're going to die. I shouldn't get too invested.
Yeah.
And realistically, like my investment's more in Hiro as a character because...
Which is fair.
Because I know like... it's also like as the mentor figure, like you are the role model for this character. You are the person this character looks up to and tries to emulate, and I see, you know, I do see Tadashi in Hiro, and I don't
I'm not nearly as affected by Tadashi's death because of my understanding that A, it was coming, and B, we would see more of those elements and more of those character beats from Hiro. And then the other, I think there's a third fairly emotional scene, and it is when Hiro and Baymax go to rescue Abigail, and Baymax sacrifices himself to get Hiro out of there. And while I am very soft to scenes that involve the death of a loved one or the death of a family figure or the death of a role model, I'm not really that soft on scenes that involve the death of an inorganic being. When I initially saw that scene, I was like, okay, you're a robot. You can be rebuilt. And, like, the first thing in my mind was like, okay, how do we get that chip back?
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh, no, they solved that issue for me. Cool.
Yeah.
Got it. Don't have to worry anymore.
Easy peasy lemon squeezy. Yeah.
I like Baymax. I really do. But Baymax can't really die. And
it is different. And the loss is also something that is different. Although, I mean, maybe the loss is compounded by the fact that he is the last thing that Hiro kind of has of Tadashi, which has been compounded by the scene where Baymax is like, no, literally, Tadashi is in here. Like, so he is losing a piece of his brother again, if you look at it that way. But I mean, then of course he doesn't end up doing that because, like you said, he is a child prodigy and he just built another one. So, all good.
Yeah, Baymax is functionally a representation of his brother to a degree, or at least like the last thing his brother really cared for and really wanted to see flourish. And there's an argument to be had that Hiro spent a good portion of that film actively bastardizing Tadashi's view on Baymax and actively using Baymax and treating Baymax in ways that Tadashi would not approve of. But hey, like, this is, it's a sweet film. It's a good film. I'm going to sound very harsh on this film over the course of the next however much longer is left in this episode, but I do think it's a good film. What were your thoughts on Baymax's quote-unquote death?
I mean, I believe the first time I saw it, I probably got emotional just knowing myself. I don't remember, like, I distinctly remember, like, bursting into tears when Tadashi dies, and then being, like, super caught off guard when we get the sort of, like, video flashback of him and crying again. I don't remember crying at the end, although, like, given my history, I probably did. But when I watched it this time, I was definitely more annoyed with Hiro than I expected to be. Just, and I think it's literally just because of the conversation where Baymax is like, I can't do this thing that's good until you say you're satisfied with your care. And Hiro's like, no, I'm not. And I'm like, just tell the little buddy he did a good job and let him, like, save you.
And let's move on.
So I think this time around I was a little bit more kind of harsh on Hiro. I mean, obviously, I get it. This is the last thing you have of your brother. Also, you've obviously come to care for Baymax. He's been one of the core reasons why you've even gone on this journey to attempt to better yourself and overcome the trauma of losing someone that you love. So that act of letting go is obviously very hard. But like you said, it is definitely a different experience than losing a person. So, you know.
Yeah.
And it's also what Baymax was built to do. So in a sense, that's kind of like the moment where, like, Tadashi has ultimately succeeded. He has created something that is so good and so, you know, caring and so able to put others first that it, without a second, would essentially not really sacrifice himself, because again, he puts the chip gets out, but on the surface be able to choose others over himself. So I think that's like a more hopeful way of looking at that scene for me, and the way that I think that I would like to focus on it when I rewatch this film again, which will happen at some point, of like that being the moment of ultimate success for Tadashi.
I have a question.
Yeah.
This is a complete tangent, complete 180 direction from what we were just talking about.
Heck yeah, lay it on.
But, so Baymax is supposed to be a nurse, right?
Yes.
Why does he have to be able to lift over 1,000 pounds?
I mean, I'm just saying, you're probably going to need a doctor if you weigh over 1,000 pounds.
Like, under what conditions do we ever ask a nurse to lift over 1,000 pounds?
Well, that's true, but maybe that's why we need Baymax, because he could help in situations where...
We need nurses that don't skip leg day? I don't understand.
Okay, no! No, where people need to evacuate a premise or need, like...
Okay,
right,
but
like
Baymax is not a first responder.
But he could be.
Then why give him a flammable design?
Okay, but... Well, he could be flame retardant.
He could, but like he's explicitly given like a more huggable, approachable design.
I mean, if a building is falling on you and you see a giant robot running in your direction, although he's not very fast.
Yeah, he's not very. He isn't. Purpose. He has to be coded to be able to later on in the film by Hero to be able to maneuver in any way efficiently.
That is 100% true, and now all I can think of is, like, when Tadashi is trying to first make Baymax, of having him just, like, throw something across the room, or, like, rip something out of the wall, because he can do all that, but, that doesn't make any sense. You're right. That is a good transition, I would say, into all of the little indiscrepancies of this film that, on first glance, you're like, okay, cool. And then upon a second thought, you're like, hey, wait a minute.
These fridge thoughts?
What?
These fridge thoughts?
What does that mean?
There's, I can't remember the name of the film. This is a famous director who referred to these as fridge thoughts, which are thoughts that when you're in the cinema and in the film and you're watching this film, you don't really ever consider. But when you go home and you open up your fridge, you're looking in your fridge, that's when it really just hits you, and you're like, wait a minute!
Yep, 100%. 100%. So, one more fridge thought before we dive into the issues that, for Andy at least, diminish the film for him. My fridge thought was, why set up a character with a mask when the entire time, all the characters are like, oh yeah, it's Alistair Cray. But Alistair Cray has a huge frickin' pointy nose that in no way could fit under the mask of the villain they have been chasing for the entirety of the movie.
Look, I don't know what to tell you. Magic mask?
No.
Blood tape?
I remember being so annoyed.
This is very clearly
when I saw, they were like, oh my god, who is this man? And I was like, I don't know, who is that man? And they were like, it's Alistair Cray. And I was like, have you seen his nose?
But that is true. This film does try to shove the concept that this is Alistair Cray down your throat.
Like,
it's explicitly stated by multiple characters.
That's why it was never believable to me. And I knew that it wasn't, like, right from the beginning. I was like, there is no freaking way that man's nose would fit under that mask. And so, again, it gets back to that annoying dramatic irony that is, like, and I've seen things where dramatic irony can be used very well, but it is definitely one of those things that just gets under my skin, and as a viewer, while I appreciate its use, I don't like the feeling of it in many ways. And
but I don't think I would call this dramatic irony, or at least it's not intentionally dramatic irony.
So I'm just super smart, so it was dramatic irony for me.
I mean, the twist is super predictable if you understand how films work.
Or how faces work, or noses, or masks.
But even regardless of that, you know that if they are a masked figure, and you are being explicitly told that it is this one person, it's not going to be that one person.
Especially if that
and
person
literally
has
the
a huge
only
freaking nose.
And literally the only other character who would fit that description is Callahan. Like there's literally like you see Callahan's disdain for Cray. He's the only character of that build, of that age, who would have any reason to be in a kabuki mask terrorizing the city.
Surprise, it's Tadashi! Just kidding. No, I think that's true. And that, like, they definitely didn't set you up with any other side characters or mystery in that regard. Like, there was no... You're right, there was literally no one else who it could have been, because we didn't know any other characters. Like, nobody else had been introduced that we could have put in that role. So, yeah.
Plus, like, I don't trust a single thing out of T.J. Miller's mouth.
Ah, what else?
I don't... I'm not going to speak
has that voice.
To T.J. Miller as a person, as that is a completely different conversation that I'd rather not get into.
Okay.
But the characters he chooses to voice and a lot of the decisions that a lot of the decisions he chooses to make with his characters tend to get on my nerves.
Mm-hmm.
I think Fred is definitely on the better side of the spectrum, on his characters, but not it didn't quite hit me as well as I would want that character to. And like, I'm the comic book nerd who's like, yeah, this is a great reference to this, and this is a connection that we can make and all of that, but it felt almost invasive anytime he would just say something completely inappropriate.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, side tangent. Back to...
back to our main tangent, which I think we're pretty ready to get into, kind of like your reactions of the ending and the larger issues that you have structurally with the movie. Did you think?
Yeah. So I think...
Yeah? Okay.
I think the first two-thirds of this film are really solid. I think going in, Hero is established very early on and is very well established from there. You learn a lot about him as a person. You learn about a lot about Tadashi as a person. Each of the big Hero 6 groups, like I said, that they tend to be treated as one cohesive group, but they do each have their own personalities. They do each have their own 15 minutes of fame, their own moments to shine. And they're all very charismatic and very likable, even Fred to a degree. And then you have their origin story. They're coming to terms with their skills sets and their powers, their suit powers and their abilities to use them. And I think that's very well set up. And then you have their first outing as a team, which they fail. And of course they fail. It's their first outing. They're not communicating well. They're not able to react in time or do things competently whilst in the field.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes sense. And from the end of that fight to the final battle, we get about a 10-minute span where we run through the reveal of a twist villain, the attempted murder of that twist villain,
Hero. Yeah.
Yeah, by Hero. A complete 180 on their emotional arc on Hero's part. A re-meeting of the team. A very conveniently rewound tape that explains Callahan's motivations and plan. And then we immediately go from there into the final battle sequence, where now the Hero team is able to competently work together and defeat the final villain, which makes the last... it makes the third act of the film feel very ham-fisted and rushed. And it honestly takes away... Or at least for me, it feels like you had this great setup, we had this great foundation, you had this great potential for a very good, solid story, and then you just sort of didn't know how to end it, so you didn't. You rushed your way into just the ending that you wanted without really giving us the means of getting there.
Mm-hmm.
I do think Callahan, specifically as a villain, does not make for a great twist villain. I think, I understand you lost your daughter, but you lost your daughter at an age where you should fully understand that we all have lost ones. We all have individuals in our lives that we have lost that we cannot get back. And maybe we can or can blame some other individual for their absence in our life, but you can't go on a murder spree that involves the potential deaths of a child and multiple young adults.
I've also never understood... Well, okay. I've also never dealt with, like, a... serious loss or trauma, so this is coming from a place of a lot of privilege in that regard. But like the whole idea of I have lost someone and that pain is so immense that I don't care who else I hurt in my pursuit of this one goal. Especially when your anger comes from the devastation of losing someone, the fact that you would actively create situations that put others who have no involvement in the event of your trauma in danger is just baffling to me. Like, I understand the instinct to want to hurt and kill and like get revenge on the person or group of people who have been involved in whatever is causing you that pain, in this case the death of your daughter, but to do things that actively would give other people the same trauma that you have, and I guess that's what trauma does. It's not rational, but that is a very upsetting thing to see.
But it's also, right? It's not even like you aren't caring about the people you hurt along the way for your path of revenge. It's you are explicitly hurting people who have come into your life after this event, who you've watched grow and cared for. Like, yeah. Tadashi wasn't just some random bystander. This was his star pupil. This was someone who he watched grow and actively like got to know on a personal basis.
And I understand, like he didn't know Tadashi was there. He didn't know Tadashi was going to run into the building.
Oh, no, but his reaction to finding that out was that was his mistake.
Mm. True.
Like, that's not...
The lack of remorse for the death that you cause.
If anything, his reaction would be, look, Hiro, I know you lost someone close to you. We can attribute both of our losses to this one individual.
Mm-hmm.
Help me.
Yeah.
Help me get this revenge, because this person does not deserve to be here. We can attribute both of our loved ones' deaths to this person. And especially, like, the film, Hiro does technically explicitly state that whomever stole his nanotech was the same individual who started the fire.
Mm-hmm.
The film never really confirms that, but it also never really denies that either. We're left to think that that is the definitive truth, when it very well may not have.
Mm-hmm. And it could have happened, and he could have used it as an opportunity, right?
Exactly. Like... I think if it is true that that fire was started by him as a means to cover his tracks and steal this nanotech, that's real, Tom.
Yeah.
Hiro explicitly stated that he wasn't taking the nanotech to Cray, that he was keeping it and developing it with Callahan.
Yeah, and I think also specifically, like, the thing for me that stood out after you started to kind of bring up these ideas about Callahan is that, like, his journey of revenge pretty much started upon him getting the tech. We have no idea if he had been trying to develop something of his own to utilize to get this revenge on Cray, if he had been thinking about it but didn't know quite how, or if it just like hadn't been a journey that he had been going towards and then he saw this as an opportunity and just started this. Like, we have no idea at what point of his revenge scheme he found this tech, but it like felt super rushed to me that he saw Hiro's invention. And then, like, right off the bat was like, yep, this is, like, now I have this whole plan from something that I literally just learned about, like, 10 minutes ago. Because he had no way of knowing anything about what Hiro was bringing to that presentation. It was all new. So, like, the speed in which that progressed to his master plan, at which the tech was central, like, didn't feel like the timeline made sense for me.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm not going to pretend like I can write a better story than this. I'm not a writer. I'm not a screenwriter. I'm just, like, hindsight is 20/20.
Yeah.
I'm taking the work I have in front of me and trying to mold it in a way that makes sense to me. Mm-hmm. But I do think it would have been a better story if, A, we had a reason as to why this fire was started and have it explicitly not be Callahan. We can have it explicitly be Cray. We can have Cray's direct actions in an attempt to steal the tech be the one that leads to Tadashi's death.
Mm-hmm.
And this gives Callahan a means to say, look, these are the actions that Kray took. These are the actions that Kray did that led to your brother's death. Join me. You have a reason to empathize with my loss. You have a reason to empathize with what I am doing. Come with me. Help me. This is your tech. Let me improve on it. And from there, Hero can say, no, that's not what my brother would want.
Mm-hmm.
And this can, and that whole like mental process of wanting this revenge, of going in wanting this revenge, and then being met with the ability to have this revenge and not take it because you understand that that is not what the person you are trying to get this revenge for would want, can very easily lead into the whole like finding the tape and having a much stronger emotional connection to
that. Yeah, I do see that. I think that the one difference that that would then create, though, would be to kind of remove some of the parallels between Hero and Callahan, which I think the film kind of utilizes to make some of its to push for some of its like larger messages, right? Like you have Hero and Callahan both who are just individuals who lost someone because of a choice that that person made, whether it was to be involved in a project or to go into a burning building, who are able to blame somebody else for creating that situation, whether it's for setting the fire or for saying, you know, go ahead with this project anyway, even if there might be some irregularities or some signs that say maybe we shouldn't do it, who both get the chance to get revenge on that person and try both actively to take it, right? Like Callahan obviously follows through with his plan, and Hero attempts, when he learns of Callahan's role with the fire, to essentially kill Callahan. But you get this split of difference where Callahan this entire time has been working completely alone, whereas Hero has a team. So his ability to get out of that cycle of revenge and violence and hurt is because he is able to be pulled out of it by a community of people that cares for him. So I think by creating those distinct parallels, you get that message, which you wouldn't if Callahan weren't involved in the fire itself. But again, that's not to say that that's necessarily a message that has to be a part of the film, and that they couldn't have utilized the shift that you suggested to push a different and just as valuable message. I'm just saying that that shift would ultimately kind of change.
I don't necessarily think that the changes I make remove that parallel. They absolutely make that parallel weaker, and potentially the message that you're trying to convey a little bit weaker, but the actions that Tadashi and Abigail take are still their own in that in my presented change.
Mm-hmm.
The cause of their death, if anything, this makes a bit of a stronger parallel, because the cause of both deaths involved are now directly, they're now, if we were to say that Kray was the one to start the fire in an attempt to take the nanotech for his own.
Oh, so it would both be a result of Kray. I see.
Exactly.
I see. Yeah, okay.
And they're both met with the and especially because you are now having Callahan being this potential future for Hero, giving this ultimatum of, you can find your revenge, you can find your, what I'm going to call solace, even though it's not really solace, in this plan that I am going to enact, that I have already started the process of.
I see. So rather than Hero shifting away because of choosing not to seek revenge on Callahan, it would be ultimately the same. It would just be him not seeking revenge
on Kray.
On Kray. Okay.
After being given an explicit means to do so by Callahan.
I'll totally give you that. You're right. That makes sense. Because I do really like that ultimate message that they get at about, right, like the importance of community, the importance of working with a team, the importance of building up these emotional supports outside of yourself.
Yeah, and you can even make that more explicit in the changes that I make by having the fact that Hero went in with friends and have friends there to console him and to help him through his decision in that moment be the reason why Hero steps down and does not take Callahan up on his offer.
True, true.
Also, I do want to just say, Callahan's plan is real stupid.
Yeah.
He's trying to kill someone, and he just unearths an old device from way back when and what sucks up the top half of his building into another realm. Like,
again, at a public event a public where there are so many people who are uninvolved in your anger and pain, like complete strangers, random people. And like, I get kind of like, you know, isn't it great how I'm using the same technology that you used to destroy my life to destroy yours? Ha ha ha. What a twist. How ironic and evil of me. And like, I get, okay, I'm gonna destroy this thing that you built, you know, like you destroyed my daughter and then kill you. But like, I don't know. I feel like, again, as a scientist, like, wouldn't he have rather rebuilt the thing to try to find his daughter? But I guess that's, you know, the two separate ways
he didn't grieve. Yeah, he didn't know that Abigail was alive also.
But that's another thing that grief can do, right? Like, if you experience this event, you can go into this trajectory of denial where you just refuse to admit that that thing has happened. And he could have spent his life trying to get her back, just working off of blind inability to accept her death, right? Like, that's a complete legitimate way for someone to react to a trauma that big.
Yeah, like, I'm not going to tell anyone how they should be reacting to trauma.
And again, I especially shouldn't, because I'm hella privileged in that aspect of my life. Like, I can't connect. Yeah.
Like, there's no way for you to know what other people are thinking. There's no way for you to know what other people are going through. I'm not going to tell anyone how to react to trauma or how to treat their own trauma. That is a journey for each and every individual to do in their own healthy way. And there's no definitive answer to any of this. What I am going to say is, don't murder people.
Hey, I agree. Here's a novel idea. Don't catapult others into horribly, horrible, painful experiences by killing people they love for no reason.
Like, I mean, I love me a good redemption arc. You know I do. And I do think that given Callahan's story and given Callahan's background, he could have very well have been given one. And I think his whole backstory and his whole motivations coming out of him and coming from a means of him to try to get the heroes to empathize with him would have been much stronger than them scrolling through a video and just conveniently being able to find all the hints within a span of 5 minutes.
Yeah, do you know how hard it is to scroll through video footage and find anything meaningful because you never know frickin' when to stop? It is hard.
So anyway, Big Hero 6 is a film.
Yes.
I do think this film has a very good message in terms of building your support system and having individuals around you who can help you through traumatic events. Knowing where your emotional supports are and knowing when and how you can rely on them is extremely important. But it's also just a step of many along this process.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think this film does a great job of giving you the rest of that process.
That's fair.
Nadia, is there anything else you would like to discuss before we wrap things up?
Wow, what a smooth transition, Andy.
I know, thank you. I tried real hard on it.
How unscripted and natural. I do think, just to end on, you know, another good note, beside the messages that this film presents that we both, you know, think are important, I think it does a really awesome job with introducing a diverse cast. Again, like, we don't really get as much backstory or depth from the other characters that the other members of, you know, the Big Hero 6, but they do represent a lot of different identities, and that's also a shift that was made from the comics, because I mean, again, I didn't read the comics, but I looked up what the characters look like. And the film actively changes a lot of their character design. You know, they make Wasabi Black, they make Honey Lemon, they don't really ever say Latina?
I don't know.
I lost my train of thought.
Diversity.
Yes. But, you know, they change a lot of the core character designs from the comics for the film. So, you know, like, we have Hero and Gogo, who are still both Asian, and Fred, I don't actually know what Fred looks like in the... Wow. All right. I'm gonna start over again.
Fred's
Take
white.
Three. Take three. Fred's white. Okay.
Fred's literally white. TJ Miller. Fred is explicitly the son of Stanley.
Okay. So, yeah. So Fred stays the same, but, like, they, you know, they make Wasabi Black, and Honey Lemon is Latina, and they, they actively try to create more diversity within this film, which is something that I value a lot. And I also think is a bold step, especially when you're working from a source text, to say, hey, wait a minute, just because the text represents a cast of characters that looks or is or have certain identities doesn't mean that we can't shift that to be more representative and to allow a space for others to see themselves in these characters. And that's something that I care quite, because we're getting, you know, we're in a time where we're getting all of these remakes and we're getting all of these remakes of older films, but then also, you know, remakes of books and older media. And if we're looking for a space where we can have more diverse characters and voices, I think it's important to question the source material that you're working with. And you're saying, hey, is this a space where we could give voice to more minority groups? And I am super psyched that Big Hero 6 did that. That was very exciting for me.
Yeah, I do sort of take issue with Honey Lemon specifically.
I was going to say, I do remember a huge controversy coming up around her identity, and I'm curious to hear what your issues are, because I don't know if it's actually along the lines of what I think, but I think I know the direction that you're going in. But
well, so Honey Lemon is Latina, and she is voiced by a Latinx voice actor, which is really the only reason that Disney would actively put her out as Latina. Her character's design is white-skinned, blonde.
Although her hair is dyed, to be fair. But
still, like, it's not
yeah.
super representative of what you would expect from a Latinx character. And Disney is absolutely a franchise that will come out and have animated characters who are displayed as primarily Caucasian, voiced by a number of different voice actors.
Mm-hmm.
Regardless of the race of the voice actor. And if we're going to call that representation, I would like to see it more blatant, more deliberate on the yeah. animators' parts. But I'm not going to be like, it's absolutely 100% necessary. Honey Lemon as a character does work as a character. I would like to, but I don't need to see her or hear her speak Spanish or anything along those lines.
Yeah. Well, I think it goes into the fact that we don't have enough Latinx stories for this one. And again, like, that's the problem with when you're breaking into diversity, those characters are going to get scrutinized so much more harshly because we don't have other characters to compare them with. They stand as representations for the group that they come from, because that is part of the burden of being a minority, right? Like, you are representative of a larger group of people, as opposed to not having that burden as, you know, somebody who is white or male, you know?
Yeah, it's not only are you a representative of that large group of people, you are one of the very few.
Exactly. So I think, like, my issue is more that we don't have more characters where we wouldn't need that overt, because again, like, I'm sure there are a lot, that was part of the conversation that I remember, like, when I was looking through kind of people's reaction towards a character, like, a lot of people were like, hey, I'm Latina and I look like Honey Lemon, and like, to see me in this film, like, that was very exciting for a lot of people, right? So again, it's like, it's for me, the larger issue is less with the way that they presented her in the film and more of the fact that we don't have more characters where she doesn't have to stand for this entire group of people. But I do definitely understand that desire, right? Because, like, I didn't even, when I saw the film initially, I just assumed she was white. Like, I didn't even pick up that she wasn't.
Oh, same.
So, like, and that's part of that, and I understand how that is part of the issue.
That's the thing, like, it is a fairly diverse cast, it is a fairly diverse set of heroes, but to some degree, we can't really praise the diversity if it's not, if it's just sort of hidden, you know?
I see that. It's a way of being like, yay, and then thinking your job is done.
Yeah, your job's never done.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. But I do think, just in terms of getting a huge franchise that is successful, that features characters who aren't just white, this was incredibly important, right? Like, to have a huge Disney Marvel franchise movie whose main character was Asian too is like, that's super exciting as well.
Oh, it's huge.
But yeah, I totally, again, like, we are both very critical individuals, so give us something fantastic and we'll be like, but
yeah, like I'm not gonna call my issues with Callahan a nitpick. I do think that that is a serious
I think that's completely
detriment to the film, but like this absolutely is a nitpick.
Yeah, which is fair. We're both very nitpicky people, and as I have said before in another podcast, I was raised by a dad who, as soon as we were done watching a movie, he'd be like, here are the issues that I had, which is great because it made me a critical viewer and I kind of love it now, but like, yeah, that is the family I come from. Every movie, I'd be like, I loved it. What is my dad going to say about it and how it sucked? So, good times.
So all in all, this is a film that I honestly would recommend. It's a fun film. It's a film I would drink to. It's a film I would not really think about all that much while watching, because as soon as I do start thinking about it, that is where the film starts to fall apart at the seams for me. I think the first two-thirds of the film are very solid, and I don't really have a whole lot of complaint there. But overall, it's a good film. I don't, you know, not deserving of an Oscar win, but definitely deserving of the nominee.
I can sit well with that. I also would recommend this film. I think I have been able to separate myself enough from the kind of plot troubles. I don't know how to frame words right now. I'm very tired. That Andy sees. I've been able to separate a little bit, so I feel like I'm able to continue to enjoy it even with those issues. But I definitely see how they could kind of mar the experience for someone who is really, really looking for this strength in pacing and this strength in plot progression throughout. I still really loved it. I think it's great. I watch it quite a bit, you know, as one does. I rewatch this film every, you know, couple years, and I think it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. So next week we will be discussing Klaus.
Woo!
A Netflix original series regarding the origins of Christmas.
Netflix original movie.
A Netflix original movie regarding the origins of Halloween.
Yes, I'm very excited.
Yes, Christmas.
I will be recording that episode during Hanukkah, so it will be a lovely, lovely time.
If you have anything to say about Big Hero 6 or would like to give your two cents on Klaus, or have any suggestions for future videos, by videos I mean podcasts, or have any suggestions on future episodes, please can reach us at annymedpod@gmail.com and at annymedpod on Twitter. Thank you for listening. Goodbye.
Bye.